And coming up next, it's the October 22nd Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show here in beautiful 2020. We're going to be competing, of course, or attempting to distract you from the ongoing disaster of the furorial, or they call it the presidential race, or just the national and even local elections. Elections should be in quotes, coming around in a week and a half. I guess there's a debate tonight between Fuhrer Trump and would-be Fuhrer Old Joe, Burisma, Russiagate, Biden. I guess you can see where I'm sitting. These are, of course, two fangs of the same corporate duopoly, as far as I'm concerned. And it really doesn't matter who you vote for here in California, as far as the furorial race goes, because Biden is pretty much, probably pretty much a guaranteed winner, unless this latest, the latest exposures around the Burisma scandal, which where his son is, this paid do-nothing Burisma board member, backed up by Joe Biden, with threats against the individual who's exposing the Burisma fraud or corruption. I think his name was Shoigin, and that's been discussed at length. Different places, but hasn't gotten much media. Nor, of course, has the Biden, the Hunter Biden laptop emails, which are being dismissed as Russian disinformation, but the guy who repaired the emails, or actually who received some of the emails, has actually spoken publicly about it, and he did get emails regarding, I mean, all this was a scandal that was the New York Post tried to get into last week, but mainstream media refused to discuss it. It only shows up on Fox Media. I'm no fan of Fox Media. Anyway, this show is not about that. We're going to be looking at talking with folks in the Benchlands campground. We're going to be reviewing back and forth at the Huff meeting, which happens every Wednesday, and we did that yesterday. We're here, so he'll hear some of that. And some interviews just on and about the city from folks who are actually outside trying to survive out there and facing an uncertain future as winter looms, and what's going to happen with the campground, at the not just the county campground, but the growing number of tents above the Benchlands that are next to the lawn bowling campground, that's how I described it, which where Cooper and Russell and others are. Anyway, listen in and you'll hear some thoughts on all that stuff. I apologize in advance. I recommend never try to go to a dentist and get dental work done on the same day you're trying to rush together to put a 6 o'clock show on the air or on the net. It's not the best results resulting often, but we'll see what results, and you can be the judge.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So, to start the show off with a bang and a groan, on the line with me just calling in is Alicia Cool, who is, I just passed by their spot. She actually tried to be, kept a whole series of, small vehicles who were with her. parked legally on the streets along Olive Street near the CVS on off of Mission, which was supported by the Transportation and Public Works Commission, but overturned by City Council, and apparently they drove her away. But you have new troubles and problems to give us. What's up, Alicia?
Yeah, well, they drove me away during the middle of a pandemic, a shelter in place, and also in the middle of a, you know, political election. So I feel like that's interfering, too, because what they're doing is they're making it really difficult for me to do anything other than try to write letters for these tickets and move back and forth. So I called because
we should say that you are running for the Santa Cruz City Council. I know many will know this, but some will not. And you are one of a possible slate of four, although I'm not sure how much the other three have been supporting you. But so you're saying that this does interfere with your campaign because now you're being pursued with more tickets, even in different places.
Well, there's a particular officer, too, which is what I wanted to let you know. But yes, it's interfering because I have 4 letters now I have to write contesting these tickets. Otherwise, they would have me over $300, almost $400, and I have a family. You know, it's the holidays. I'm not paying $400 because this particular officer likes to follow around my perfectly legal registered and insured vehicles and write nonsense bogus tickets. I don't even know how this could be legal, but I'm getting tired of this shit.
What are they claiming, Alicia, you are guilty of? He or she claiming they're guilty.
Well, when I was parked on Olive Street the last week of being able to park on Olive Street, and of course she put a green sticker on the one that you saw me take a video of trying to get off. Eric was trying to get that off. She wrote 3 tickets on my Prius. I think maybe she doesn't like it because it has a spare tire on it right now. I'm not sure. But it does have a donut tire on it. It's a legal spare tire. And she wrote 1 ticket for tires too small for the vehicle. Tires. As in more than one.
But there was only one.
She wrote a ticket for 2-hour parking. And she also wrote a ticket for, what is this one? Storing my vehicle on the city street, $118. That is a perfectly legal registered vehicle that was parked.
Uh-huh.
And we drive daily. And then, let's see, what's this other one? And then I have another one. Oh, this one they put on my RV for storage of a vehicle on city street. So they got my RV too. And then yesterday she put a parking too close to a fire hydrant on my Prius. But there's not even any marks near the fire hydrant. We're significantly parked away from the fire hydrant, parked in a different location, and it's the same lady writing the ticket, volunteer B534. So it's the same damn lady now following me all over town. It doesn't matter where I go, apparently. She's going to write tickets on these fully registered insured vehicles that are complete bullshit, taking up my time like this.
And what is her name? Do we know?
I don't know. And I'm, you know, really tired of her. I don't even care. They look like homeless hating, like Karen ladies. The driver that was driving looks like Carol Pohamas. I even asked her if her name was Carol and she said no. They look dead on Carol Pohamas.
Have you videoed any of this when she's been giving tickets?
No, because they catch me off guard in the middle of, like, doing something or leaving with my family. Like, right now, I was actually just leaving to go run an errand. And I had to jump outside. I basically jumped outside. My main concern was that she don't place that green thing on my window again because it's so damn hard to get off. That's what I was concerned with, not videoing this witch, but making sure she doesn't place one of those big, humongous, sticky green things on my window again. You know what? I'd like to know what vehicle Andy Mills drives, because I've got a couple green stickers with backings, and I'm willing to let him know what it feels like scraping this off your vehicle, although I'm sure he would just pay someone to do it for him.
I had a question, but it's escaped me.
I'm not surprised. I'm sorry, and I'm venting. I'm really ticked off.
No, of course.
I hardly have time for, like, regular life stuff. I'm dealing with everything, kids, and I've got paperwork to start a new job, and I've got all this shit, now I have to write letters for more tickets.
You want to say what kind of a job you're working at? Because, you know, you've been accused of being an aimless ne'er-do-well.
Oh, well, I've been out of work since March due to COVID-19 and trying to get a reasonable accommodations to work from home, because there were several cases of COVID-19 at my work. But now I am going to be working at a new location, actually two locations, being a supervisor. So I won't be necessarily doing case management.
And this is a homeless service?
Say a large homeless shelter.
Uh-huh.
In San Jose, located in San Jose. I'll be managing two locations, like I said, supervising. So if case management has an issue and somebody's not really receptive to case management, as a supervisor, I will step in and assist them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually a step up for me because it's less of the tedious kind of responsibilities. Case management, I don't know if anybody knows, but it's really tedious. It's everything from paperwork and setting appointments and doing all kinds of things, supportive services. Now I just will oversee things, make sure everything is running smoothly, and then report back to the program manager for two different locations.
But you, of course...
it's pretty good. I make more money now. I'll be making $31.25 an hour.
How many hours a week are you working?
Well, it would be full-time, except for the only position available for that is graveyard, and I cannot stay up all night like that. So I'll be working part-time.
I know in the past when we discussed your job over in San Jose, you expressed... initially, you expressed some optimism about the job. You felt you were actually helping people. But as time went on, you began to feel that this really wasn't terribly helpful to people, even though you were, you know, you're getting work out of it. What's your feeling now about that?
I mean, some people need it and some people don't. So I think case management and that type of, you know, offering services is very helpful to the people who really need it. But taking everybody and categorizing them and offering that to everybody is not necessarily good. And I believe in empowering people, you know, over time, like, to do things themselves. So maybe some initial case management, but over time, you wouldn't be filling out paperwork and things like that. They'd be more self-sufficient. I think that's part of getting on track, you know, after you've got housing and stuff like that.
Now,
that's part of getting things on track. And so I think it's very expensive the way that it's currently operating and that it could be more efficiently used.
Mm-hmm. You're also trying to conduct, in a way, although I'm not sure how much energy and time you're actually able or willing or, in fact, putting into the election campaign here for the Santa Cruz City Council. Any new adventures or comments or accounts of what's going on there?
Right now I'm trying to get as many people who don't normally vote or who are unhoused to get out and vote for me, you know, or just to vote in general. I think it's important.
And how are you doing this?
We have a couple things coming up. I will have to talk to Keith as far as specifics, but I know we were trying to set up a couple of events and actually get people to vote.
Remember, you only have about a week and a half, so keep that in mind.
Right.
Any reports, and this, of course, has always been my issue, and the problems I've had with the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, of which you are the president, is, well, you've gotten a lot of signatures for people signing up for membership. The actual ability to turn that into real kind of organizational action, combination of COVID, a combination of your own, you know, personal difficulties, and also harassment by authorities, all kinds of things, has been, you know, problematic. Is there any advance?
Well, we're constantly taking some action, but, you know, getting everyone together and, like, yeah, there's been a lot of factors lately, obviously. But in general, we have, I mean, I wouldn't call it a meeting, but union members get together daily since we have the, you know, COVID-19 disaster / fire release two now station going up.
That's
on the corner of Front and Laurel, seven days a week. So we are always seeing each other.
Food Not Bombs
area.
Yeah.
Testing things, yeah.
Has anything come out, any reports from those meetings that you think are of interest to, you know, those of us who are listening?
Well, like I said, I wouldn't call them meetings, but I would say that we interact with each other every day.
Well, yeah, I don't necessarily mean formalized meetings, but presumably you may be getting information that gives you a kind of a clearer sense of what's going on outside. Do you have any new reports on what's happening there?
Well, I just hear that the Benchlands encampment will be closing soon. I know that the, I think it's the Red Cross then, but I'm not sure what it's called, but the CZU Lightning Complex Hotel Relief stuff is going to be ending on the 26th. So I know that a lot of programs are ending soon, so we might see a lot of impact from that.
There, of course, is a shitty council meeting coming up on Tuesday. I guess there's going to be a vote on, this is not so much a homeless issue directly, although it has some homeless implications, the library under the parking lot and the removal of the farmer's market area as a public space. You're one of the few candidates, one of four out of a running field of nine, who, you know, are apparently opposed to this, along with a lot of, I think, Santa Cruzans. But, of course, it is cheer-led by Martine Watkins and Cynthia Matthews. Watkins, of course, running for re-election, and a number of other candidates on the slate that the Sentinel endorses, for instance. Any sense of how homeless people, is there any way homeless people are being treated in terms of, vehicular situations? You've talked about your own, which is, you know, you are an activist who's being targeted. Any other reports about vehicular problems or, I don't know, the increased opportunities that people in vehicles may be having?
No, not necessarily new things, not since Olive Street. You know, it's become completely aware to me that this is a tactic, you know, the ticket system and the going after people. Is something that they do to get what they call nuisance vehicles or homeless people off the streets. But it's also become perfectly aware to me that it doesn't matter if you register and insure your vehicle or not. If they want to make up bullshit tickets and come after you, they're going to do that. And so that's what I'm having a problem with. You know, I'm starting to really get pissed off. Like, why did I even bother to pay an expensive registration and go through all this if they're going to try to target and take my vehicle anyway?
Are there people in a similar situation who you see maybe?
A lot of people have already lost their places. A lot of people have tickets. I know Leanne is constantly saying that she's a target as well, and I see her parked a little ways up from me on Delaware.
Are folks interested in resisting this? That's always the issue. People often get picked off individually and singly. And the value of having...
Well, yeah, I'm resisting. Of course people are interested in resisting.
As a group.
I called and asked for the sergeant to call me back because I want this to be known. I'm tired of this.
Right, I'm talking about as a group. As a group, Alicia. I mean, individual resistance, I think, is of course
a good
thing.
I don't know. We don't even park as a group. We're not even able to do that. So as a group, I don't know.
Okay.
The only resistance tactical resistance towards that, I'm not even sure what you would do. I mean, wait till you've acquired enough tickets, and when they come to tow you, surround the vehicle, and that's good a couple of times, but I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm thinking more along the lines of, you know, marching to the volunteer police headquarters or Mills Place, holding another press conference, giving public speeches.
I don't know. We've done that like 10 or 15 times. That takes up a lot of time, and then I still have to write letters for tickets.
I haven't been aware that it's been done more than once, but maybe you know sometimes it's been done that I don't know about. In any case, you know, it's sounds like a pretty miserable situation. Is there anything additional you want to add or anything you want to put out to people?
Not at the moment. I just wanted you to know that it's a particular community service officer that I don't know if she's like anti-homeless or just targeting me, or I'm trying to get to the bottom of this particular person and why she has a problem with me. It seems it's not going to matter where I park in town because there's going to be V534.
Right. See if you can find out the name of V534. It's supposed to be public information. I'd put in a Public Records Act request. I mean, you have a right to know that. That would mean writing an email that says, please send me the name and information of, you know, if first you can ask for it, and you probably should ask for it by phone. And if that doesn't work, then you'd immediately say, please send me all records concerning all citations by this officer from, I don't know, July 1st through October 31st. And also any other directives that she's been given, any communications with her back and forth. And please identify this officer as well. Yeah, I mean, you can do that. And I think that's one step that can be taken. Admittedly, it's ponderous, it's slow, it doesn't, you know, address the obvious.
Well, there's got to be some sort of connection, like somebody's asked her to harass me or something, and she's doing it.
Could be. I mean, you know, I would assume that there is a political motive here. That's my general feeling. But, you know, the real difficulty is, of course, finding the paper trail, but you got to start by getting something. And every time you can document it, of course, it's good. And it's hard to do, as you pointed out.
Well, doing my best.
Keep it up. And keep the reports coming in if you're so inclined.
Okay. I will talk to you soon. Good luck with the rest of your show.
Hey, thanks, Alicia.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Alicia Kuhl, who's been working on homeless civil rights issues for at least a year and a half or 2 years now. And she's been pretty high profile on these issues and is running for the Santa Cruz City Council. And you could find a lot of her information on Facebook if you want to go there. Also with the Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates. Let's take a musical break and wander into the Marat Saad, which is an abbreviation for the very long name, The Persecution and Assassination of Jean-Paul Marat, as performed by the inmates of the Asylum of Charenton under the direction of the Marquis de Sade. This is a 60s play/musical/political polemic about a period of time during the French Revolution when there was a play held in the, I think it was a fictional play, but it kind of compares a political figure, Jean-Paul Marat, who was a radical in the French Revolution, who was very concerned about the rights of the poor and very angry about that, and very outspoken in terms of urging a violent counter-response to the violence of the authorities. And the Marquis de Sade, who is another famous individual who's known for his, I guess he become eponymous with the sadism, is where the word sadism comes for, is de Sade. He was held in a lunatic asylum, and this whole thing takes place in a lunatic asylum. But this is fundamentally about Jean-Paul Marat and how he was assassinated. And it's a musical of a rather somber sort. So here's a little music.
Homage to Marat!
After the revolution and the old king's execution, 4 years after, remember how those courtiers took their final bow. Fighting man keeps on with his writing. 4 years after the Bastille fell, he still recalls the old battle.
Because of the laurel shortage. The laurels all went to decorate academics, generals, and heads of state, and their heads are enormous.
Good old Mara, by your side we stand a fool. You're the only one that we can ask at all.
get any better.
Oh, yes, he fought, and he fought unafraid, sniffing down traitors, by traitors betrayed. Mara in the courtroom, Mara underground, sometimes the otter, and sometimes the hound, fighting all the gentry, and fighting every priest, businessman, the bourgeois, the military beast. Mara always ready to stifle every scheme of the sons of the arse-licking dying regime. We've got new generals, our leaders are new. They sit and they argue, and all that they do is sell their own colleagues to ride upon their backs, or jail them, or break them, or give them all the axe. Screaming in language that no one understands, of the rights that we grant with our own bleeding hands, when we wiped out the bosses and stole from the wall, and the prison they told us and I lost us all.
And you can find the entire Maratsat movie from the mid to late 60s on YouTube. Just look up Marat, M-A-R-A-T, slash, or I should say, slash Sad, Maratsat. Anyway, the lyrics of the song, in case you couldn't hear them all, was 4 years after the revolution and the old king's execution. 4 years after, remember how those courtiers took their final bow. String up every aristocrat, out with the priests, and let them live on their fat. 4 years after we started fighting, Mara keeps up with his writing. 4 years after the Bastille fell, he still recalls the old battle yell. Down with all of the ruling class, throw all the generals out on their ass. Why do they have the gold? Why do they have the power? Why do they have the friends at the top? Why do they have the jobs at the top? We've got nothing, always had nothing, nothing but holes, and millions of them living in holes, dying in holes, holes in our bellies and holes in our clothes. Mara, we're poor, and the poor stay poor. Mara, don't make us wait anymore. We want our rights, and we don't care how. We want a revolution now. 4 years after he fought, and he fought unafraid, sniffing down traitors by traitors betrayed, Mara in the courtroom, Mara underground, sometimes the otter and sometimes the hound, fighting all the gentry and fighting every priest, the businessman, the bourgeois, the military beast, Mara always ready to stifle every scheme of the sons of the ass-licking dying regime. We've got new generals, our leaders are new, they sit and they argue, and all that they do is sell their own colleagues and ride upon their backs, or jail them, or break them, or give them all the axe. Screaming in language that no one understands of the rights that we grabbed with our own bleeding hands when we wiped out the bosses and stormed through the walls of the prison they told us would outlast us all. Mara, we're poor, and the poor stay poor. Mara, don't make us wait any more. We want our rights, and we don't care how. We want a revolution now. And there are numerous verses that are more, but those are the only ones that were sung in that version of the song, which is called Homage to Mara. So next I'm going to read an online story from the Street Roots newspaper, which is the homeless created and homeless sold newspaper up in Portland, Oregon. From back in July, houseless plaintiffs win in lawsuit against Grants Pass. In a town where no year-round emergency shelter is provided, people forced to sleep outside will have relief from punitive measures, by Emily Green, 23rd of July, 2020. A federal judge on Wednesday issued an opinion in the class action lawsuit homeless residents brought against the southern town of Grants Pass, finding the town's use of violations and fines to punish people for sleeping outside is unconstitutional. This ruling has implications for other jurisdictions in Oregon that leverage violations and fines against people experiencing homelessness for sleeping outside when there is nowhere else for them to rest. The lawsuit brought by Oregon Law Center on behalf of the plaintiffs was the first to test the landmark Martin v. Boise ruling, which in 2018 declared it unconstitutional to punish people for sleeping outdoors in public spaces where there aren't enough shelter beds to meet demand. It was clear under the Boise decision that criminal prosecution under these circumstances is unconstitutional. The opinion U.S. Magistrate Mark D. Clark issued this week in Grants Pass clarifies that the Boise ruling also applies to civil violations and punitive fines. The ruling does not prevent cities from imposing anti-camping laws, such as the prohibition of tents or limits on areas and times of day that sleeping outdoors is allowed. It does, however, prevent a city from banning sleeping outside as broadly as Grants Pass. Grants Pass ignores the basic life-sustaining need to keep warm and dry while sleeping in order to survive the elements, Clark wrote in his opinion. Under the Grants Pass ordinances, if a person sleeps on public property with so much as a flattened cardboard box to separate himself from the cold, wet ground, he risks being punished under the anti-camping ordinance. Grants Pass cannot credibly argue that its ordinances allow sleeping in public without punishment, when in reality the only way for homeless people to legally sleep on public property within the city is if they lay on the ground, with only the clothing on their backs and without their items near them. This cannot be what Martin had in mind. Clark found that Grants Pass's camping ordinances violate the cruel and unusual punishment clause of the Eighth Amendment. That's the federal constitution. The final judgment on the Grants Pass case has not yet been entered, but is expected soon. I think it was finally entered, but not entirely clear. Ed Johnson, director of litigation at the Oregon Law Center, told Street Roots many housing advocates in Oregon are worried homelessness will increase drastically following the end of the eviction moratorium brought about by the coronavirus pandemic. He said he hopes this ruling will encourage local governments around the state to think about how they will mitigate increases in the homeless population in compassionate rather than punitive ways. Clark noted uprooting homeless individuals without providing them with basic sanitation and waste disposal needs does nothing more than shift a public health crisis from one location to another, potentially endangering the health of the public in both locations. This concern is particularly acute during the current COVID-19 pandemic. Clark's opinion will likely have the most impact on towns that, like Grants Pass, offer no or not enough year-round shelter for people living outside. Johnson said it might be harder to show no alternative to sleeping outside was available on any given night in a city such as Portland, where shelter options are many and have increased amid the pandemic. Clark took the slightly unusual step of pointing to programs, in his opinion, that Grants Pass could utilize to help people experiencing homelessness, instead of trying to solve street homelessness by pushing people out of the city by making their life as unpleasant as possible. You know, the Santa Cruz solution, in spite of what you may hear about increased shelter, which is true, but it is in no ways increased to deal with the entire situation, which it could be immediately by using large buildings and more tents or giving people supportive services where they are currently encamped. Clark took the unusual step. I already read that. There are many options available to Grants Pass to prevent the erection of encampments that cause public health and safety concerns without violating the Eighth Amendment, Clark wrote. The court reminds governing bodies of the importance of empathy and thinking outside the box. We must try harder to protect our most vulnerable citizens. Let us not forget that homeless individuals are citizens just as much as those fortunate enough to have a secure living space. Street Roots first reported on the lawsuit in April, finding that like many other communities across the state, Grants Pass has watched its homeless population grow as its housing affordability has declined. The town has no subsidized housing, and just half of those who are lucky enough to get a Section 8 housing voucher are able to find a landlord who will rent to them. And I've got no idea what the situation is in Santa Cruz. If anybody wants to help me compile that kind of statistic, please give me a call at 423-4833. It is true, however, that I've been told that Section 8 housing is generally not available. The waiting list has been closed. That's been what I've heard from at least one or two individuals who tried to apply for it. for housing under their Section 8, or tried to get Section 8. Despite being home to hundreds of people without a permanent residence until recently, Grants Pass offered no warming shelter for cold and wet winter nights, and it still offers no year-round emergency shelter. Nor does Santa Cruz. The warming center is not something offered by the city. It is something offered by a private individual and a private 501c3 run by Brent Adams. Let's keep that in mind. Rather than provide shelter to its homeless residents, the lawsuit Blake versus Grants Pass argued city officials worked to make their life as unpleasant as possible in an effort to push them out of town. And in spite of what rosy responses from Brent that you may have heard in one of my last shows about how there are formerly reactionary people with Take Back Santa Cruz working to help pick up trash in encampments, in his one encampment over in Felker Street, there is still generally a hostile attitude that has nothing to do with fundamentally reforming this situation and guaranteeing homeless people sane, decent, and equal citizenship in town, rather than the youth strategy of whack-a-mole and driving them on, as you heard from Alicia Kuhl just a few minutes ago. Even if they have their own van, that's not good enough for the reactionary power structure in Santa Cruz. Minutes from a City Council Community Roundtable on Vagrancy in Grants Pass in 2013 showed city councilors and law enforcement met with service providers and business leaders to brainstorm ways to get rid of problem populations before tourists arrived. The point is to make it uncomfortable enough for them in our city so they will want to move on down the road, said then City Councilor Lily Morgan. Ideas hatched at that. Now, in Santa Cruz, they use a more liberal line, which is, we're doing all we can. This is Donna Meyer's line. It's the responsibility of the state. We're really working with the county to try to get something together. And that's really important. Or Justin Cummings, the reason he had for supporting the destruction of the Ross camp, he's our mayor now, in case you've forgotten, was that he had to do it in order to please Ryan Coonerty, the supervisor, and secure the maintained funding for a very small minority of the homeless community at 1220 River Street, which lasted for a few more months before it was dispersed. But, of course, the broader number of people in Ross Camp were simply sent out into the bushes and the streets and the alleys and the parks, where they continued to be harassed and cited by the expanded police force, expanded with Parks and Rec Rangers, which have recently been returned to the Parks and Rec Department. But it's not clear. Actually, I'm not even sure if they've been returned. They may have been simply cut from the budget, because they were really Mills' go-to squad for harassing homeless people and using them as a backup against his use of mass policing to intimidate people to follow the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, anti-homeless aspects of trying to shelter in place in parks and along sidewalks, even broad sidewalks where there was no real blockage, and the alternatives were limited, if non-existent. Ideas hatched at that meeting, such as the construction, this is the back at Grants Pass again, of a jail-like sobering center, the creation of exclusion zones, which is now being used in Oakland, and I may be reading about that later or on Sunday, blanket trespassing agreements, which has been used in Santa Cruz for years, getting merchants to accept the fact that if they don't accept the trespass agreement, the cops won't come to deal with complaints that they have. Driving people out of town and leaving them elsewhere, that's a Santa Cruz so-called Homeward Bound project, all came to fruition in the years that followed. Several plaintiffs in the lawsuit testified police had offered them bus tickets out of town, usually to Medford. Most also stated in their descriptions that police disrupt them no matter where they sleep or sit, telling them to move along and encouraging them to leave town. Many believe that no matter where they try to sleep or rest, they are ticketed, fined, and prosecuted for camping, sleeping, and trespass, according to their declarations. We recently saw the removal of many tents along the levee pathway above what was Lot 27's Food Not Bombs COVID Survival Center near the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union. with the pretext that there was some need to clear debris from the river, deal with flooding possibilities. And, of course, they claimed they needed to store equipment in this Lot 27. If you look at Lot 27, you see no such storage there. Nor was it necessary, since there were storage areas in areas to both to the one side of that particular lot and another side. And they were essentially driving away a community of tents that were in or around and gathering strength from the Food Not Bombs COVID Survival Center, run by them and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, who Alicia Cole was speaking about. She didn't talk much about that, but that's what she's been doing as well. For plaintiff Deborah Blake, and she's one of the lead plaintiffs in this now class action lawsuit, the fines associated with her many citations and arrests were too much for her to pay. The 61-year-old disabled Grants Pass resident lost her job 10 years ago and soon became homeless afterward. She has been living outside ever since. I cannot afford housing, and there is no available bed for me at an emergency shelter anywhere in Grants Pass, she testified. I've been told by Grants Pass police that I should leave town. In all, Blake owes the city more than $5,000 for crimes. You heard about Alicia's problems earlier. And violations, and she has her own vehicle. Her own, as she describes it, legally registered and parked vehicle, related to her involuntary homelessness. The outcome of this lawsuit will not erase her debt. That's a story in the Grants Pass, I should say, in the Portland homeless newspaper Street Roots back in July.
And we sit here more oppressed than when we began. And they think the revolution's been won.
The people's reaction.
Why do they have the gold? Why do they have the power?
Why do they have the friends at the top?
Why do they have the jobs at the top?
And now we're going to turn to the Huff meeting that happened yesterday. Here's a segment of it where I begin to talk about Grants Pass. I think I may be in error in part of my understanding of the Grants Pass ruling. I think what it did was it extended the issuing of the ban on issuing citations to cops, or at least prosecuting them, or I think it's actually issuing them. It's because if cops are issuing citations, that requires homeless people to appear in court. I guess the city attorney could theoretically drop a lot of charges one after another, but it is essentially letting police act as though something is legal, which is not legal. That is to say, the sleeping ban type ordinance, move along, you can't be here because it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz. So the Grants Pass ordinance extended this to be not just if you face the threat of jail, but if you face a fine, and you can also sue on this basis too. Now that, I don't have a lot of details on that. I'm hoping to get more information for future shows. And admittedly, it's been, 4 months since this decision was issued by the federal court. I'm going to see if I can get in touch with someone in Grants Pass, hopefully in the next week. Whether that's actually going to happen is always problematic with me, but because I try to do a number of things and end up doing a little bit of each and perhaps not enough of one to fully complete it often. And that's kind of my modus operandi, but take it or leave it. Anyway, here's the Huff meeting, and I think you'll find it useful. I found it stimulating, and it's always a little frustrating for me because we often do a lot of talking and don't get a lot of action done, but I think at the end of this meeting we agreed to be helpful with Marty Mirabelle, or Pirate, in his legal case, because for whatever other complaints people may have against Marty, he is being harassed for standing up for Ben, whose vehicle was towed away by police. And it's a nasty and punitive situation. That's part of this whole drive the homeless out of town. For people who tell you things are getting better for the homeless, it's only if you are engaged in some kind of unreasonable protest or the neighbors are expressing legitimate concerns that you don't address. To me, this is simply not true, and it kind of builds on the Take Back Santa Cruz narrative, which is that homeless people are skunks, punks, and drunks, although there's a small percentage of truly needy and disabled people that we must, our own homeless, that we must take care of, but most of them are just these aimless travelers, deadheads, and so forth. And this is, to me, it's irrelevant. Citizens are citizens. Members of the community, for however how long, are members of the community. And people have basic rights that should be respected. And that's been the line I've been pushing for three decades and probably will continue to push, though I'm not saying one shouldn't pay some attention to the needs of people in brick-and-mortar houses and businesses. But once their concerns begin to overpower and repress people around them, as they have regularly done for decade after decade, then they have to be reined in. They have to be resisted. And it's not going to happen by appeals to nonprofits or appeals to politicians or appeals to the police department to act more nicely to them. Although, you know, one can always do this. You know, you can cross your fingers and wish upon a star. But what you really need to do is organize and stand up for this stuff in ways that produce a visible cost to those who want to engage in the act of repression. I think that's traditionally how unions have done it, how women have done it, how African Americans and Latinos have done it, how disabled people have done it, and I think that's how homeless people have to do it too, though it's a much harder row to hoe for them. Anyway, here's some of this discussion at the Huff meeting, which covers a variety of topics.